Welcome to episode 60 of the Pilot's Journey podcast, where we discuss aviation, proficiency, and enjoying the journey. My name is Stuart Stevenson, a.k.a. Pilot Stu, CFI and Flight Academy operator in North Dallas.
And I'm Mike Hart, a.k.a. Mike Stu, a commercial, backcountry, and cargo pilot and aircraft owner based in Salmon, Idaho.
And I'm Stuart Stoll, a.k.a. CFI Stu, an airline pilot in Fort Worth, Texas.
Well, you probably noticed it's been a while since we got together, but whatever triggered it, we're back together again. So what's been going on, guys?
I think I know what triggered this, though, is the Potapalooza t-shirt being retired. And
oh, my gosh. I will never retire it. I should frame it. I still have it. I remember that. That was fun times.
But yeah, that post, I think, got us talking. It's like, and then there we are. Ken Shook. So shout out to Ken Shook. We should probably put that at the back. But
This is your fault. Ken.
I haven't heard a pilot cast lately. Maybe I just missed it.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to pod fading, I think we aren't as faded as that. I miss you guys. What's funny is it was like just hearing your voices. It's like, oh God, this is going to be great. Catching up with some buddies I haven't talked to in a year better.
Well, we have been really busy, right? So with airline stuff, life, right guys?
So Stu, tell us about the airline life and stuff.
I don't think I'm a really good pilot to actually tell you what's going on with the airlines.
I've flown with you. You're a really good pilot.
Well, yes, I'm an amazing pilot, but let me say this.
And humble.
And incredibly humble and amazing pilot. And no, I'm just joking. I am a horrible pilot. I don't know why I get. My airline isn't really the airline that's kind of indicative of what the whole industry is kind of going through right now. It's kind of unique. I would consider, you know, I think I've said this before on previous episodes, but you know, I consider my airline to be a really good aviation industry secret that's going on right now. For those of you who don't know, I fly for Empire Airlines based out of Idaho. I was just up there this month. I was up there in Coeur d'Alene doing my recurrent training, which I'll get to here in a minute. But I haven't really seen an airline that really operates the way or has runs that operate the way that Empire does. And so I have it really easy. I have it incredibly easy. The pay is competitive for what we do. And I have my route. My route, I don't know if I've discussed this yet on this podcast, but you know,
you're home every night. Just get to it. You're home every night. Dog.
It's been 10 years, right? Since our last episode came out, it feels like. So, you know, for all the new generational people that are getting into us now, my airline, my route, I fly an ATR from Fort Worth Alliance Airport to Midland, Texas, and then I fly it back empty. So I show up at work, you know, it's cargo, so it's on the back end of the clock. I show up for work at 3:20 a.m. I've got a 4 a.m. departure, and I am back in my house before 9 a.m. And I do that only four times a week. I don't even work a full 5 days. So, and that's when I do fly, because our base is fully staffed now, and because they've increased the base pay recently. So now that the pay is good, they're able to hire. Now we have a fully staffed base. So now it's peak season too for us right now. So it's the holiday rush for FedEx. So we're supposed to be flying all over the place. But I have 3 weeks of reserve coming up. So, you know, I've really taken up cooking recently, the hobby. I've gotten some really good recipes. Alton Brown started his Good Eats again. I made some really awesome meals for the family recently. They really seem to enjoy it.
You know, this is the first time I've heard that schedule. I knew you were flying cargo, but I didn't realize it was an empty backhaul. I just assumed you might be stuck hanging out in Midland, Texas, and then take an afternoon load back to Dallas for the overnight stuff.
I did have to recently, I think it was this summer. This summer, I did have to abort a takeoff for the first time. I aborted a takeoff at Midland, and we got stuck in Midland because it was a mechanical issue why we aborted. And then we had to stick around and wait for a part to be mailed to us. But no, I'm home every day. I basically
9 a.m.
I don't think that's typical of most guys that are flying the line.
It's very, and I'm telling you, it's the best kept secret in aviation because the majority of our base routes are that way. And if you don't live by any of our base routes, we've got home basing available too. So you can live anywhere you want and be a home base pilot. And you go off, I think home base has a different schedule. Home base is more of a 2 week on, 1 week off schedule, I think. But you're able to come home on the weekends. You can just jump seat home on the weekends and be at your house and then go back out to wherever you're outstationed. So, it's phenomenal. My biggest fear with this airline when I got hired was that I was going to get bored flying from Alliance to Midland, you know, four times a week. I was just going to get really bored with it. But the job actually stays really interesting. And the airplane keeps me on my toes. And the people that I work with are great. FedEx side.
Do you always have the same crew or a fairly short list of people you fly with?
No, I have flown with or worked in some capacity with just about every pilot in our system that flies the ATR. And so, you know, we have a lot of home base pilots that travel. So I will fly with them. Every now and then I do TDY. No more than a week at a time. So there may be every other, until recently, now that we have pilots, I haven't traveled at all. But before, when the pilot shortage, before our pay scale had increased and we had trouble staffing pilots, I traveled about 1 week every other month. You know, I would be in either Tulsa or Lubbock or Midland or something. So, so I got to hop around a bit. I accomplished my IOE training in Alaska, and they had this beautiful southern run. You know, I've talked about this on the podcast as well. But
hey, you have to explain what IOE is. Can't be dropping all these acronyms like TDY and IOE.
For you general aviation folk, IOE is initial observation experience or initial
operating experience,
right? So it's right when you get your type rating and you get on the line, they put you with a check airman for, you know, however many hours it takes technically. But, you know, for about a week, you fly with a check airman and he teaches you the ropes and the ins outs of the airline and what's expected of you. So I got to do that in Alaska with a really nice check airman who we had the southern route. You know, it was like Anchorage. I don't have a map of Alaska before, but if I can remember, the bases were Anchorage, Sitka, Juneau, Ketchikan, probably something else down there in that whole southern part of Alaska. And then they had an Alaskan to Fairbanks run. And I did this IOE in January 3 years ago when they had record snowfall in Anchorage. Now, record snowfall in Anchorage is nothing to laugh at. That was some crazy stuff there. I remember walking out of my hotel and my car was completely under snow. So I didn't get to work that day, unfortunately. But it's been so much fun. I got to see all of Alaska, Washington, Idaho. I get up there every year. When I go up to do my recurrent training, when I go up to Idaho, my recurrent training month is typically in the winter. So when I go up there, I take a day off. I go skiing. I get an annual ski trip out of it every year. It's wonderful. And so now I'm coming up on my upgrade finally, because I've been with the airline for 3 years. I've got my hours. So I'm a first officer right now, and I'm just about to, here in about a month, I'm about to do my upgrade training into captain. So I'm real excited for that.
Captain Stu, wow. We have to have a new moniker for you.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I already have Siri call me captain on my phone. So
I wouldn't have said that out loud, but you know, whatever.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know, it's funny is that was one of the things when I'm at UPS loading the caravans, you know, the loaders will come over and say, captain, because they don't know my name. So it's like, captain, captain. That so threw me off being just because, like, I'm turning around looking for who's the guy behind me they're talking to.
Well, when you're in a dual crew environment, I get stuff like that too. But with the caravan, you are pretty much the captain, right? They call you captain. It's kind of weird. You're not used to it, but you are actually the captain of that airplane, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where you have to definitely supervise the load, because if they don't load it correctly, you'll not have a CG that will, you will have a CG that you cannot fly, or that you'll have to reload or die.
Do they load HAZ on your plane, on the caravan?
Yeah, we have HAZMAT. Usually it's not very common. I'd say, oh gosh. I'm trying to think. I had some last week. I had just one package. Usually it's just a box or two.
You lucky. We get a lot of HAZMAT. A lot of HAZMAT. And the HAZ is the thing that, for me, that I have to keep an eye on the most in my job. And because they will load stuff on the airplane that should not go on the airplane, you know, and it's or mislabeled or things like that. And I had to knock off a box just recently because it was vibrating. It was a vibrating box.
Let's not talk about what was in the box.
Well, we did not open the box. We moved the box, you know, 15, 20 feet from the airplane and had security come out and grab it. And, but it's just, it's crazy the stuff that, that I see with this HAZ material. Let me tell you something else. All right. Talking about HAZ material, they were loading huge steel drums of a fluid that comes out of horses, right? And it spilled. It fell off the belt loader and spilled all over the ramp.
Now you're talking about these sperm containers that look like R2-D2 cans with the liquid nitrogen?
Yes.
I've carried a lot of that to Burns, Oregon, to the ranching. I have hauled more bull semen than probably most, well, obviously than I had before being a cargo pilot. The odd stuff that I carry is out of Logan, Utah. There, it's a big dairy, a valley, the Cache Valley in Logan is a dairy production area. And for whatever reason, pregnant cows, the blood of pregnant cows somehow has some sort of immunological value or pharmaceutical value. And so I'll get these coolers of cow blood, which I always just imagine the smoking man in the X-Files. You know, it's like there's got to be a reason. There's some nefarious reason people need cow blood from pregnant cows. Great,
great and on the next episode of Veterinarian Aviation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what we've become. I can't even tell. We were loading the airplane and, you know, we have these giant, they call them the cans, right? But FedEx has these giant steel cans that they load on their Airbuses and 75s and things like that, DC 9s and or 10s or whatever. And so they fit in the compartment lights. Well, they bring those out. Those don't fit in the ATR, obviously. So they just load them up to a reference line and open them up. So anyway, they open them up. Someone was in there tossing boxes out of it. And I just hear this poor woman just started screaming bloody murder, and we all ran to see what happened. And she's just inside this can freaking out, screaming. But this giant container containing live crawfish apparently fell over and spilled out inside the can. And all these live crawfish were like snipping, you know, with their little pinchers at her, walking around. And she was swimming in them, and she was not, it was not a good day for her. She freaked out. She did not handle it well, but we got her out of it.
Oh, for a pot of boiling water.
You know, it's funny.
Yeah, man.
I've had live turtles. I have had live, lots of bees, hauling bees either. Probably the nastiest thing was boxes of crickets that are basically for food.
Yeah,
you know, going to animals, pet shops. And the reason I say they're nasty is they just stink. You know, they have
they stink bad, don't they? And our problem is that they get stuck. They'll get out of their box and they'll get stuck under the floorboards in our airplane because they're like cargo. They're cargo floors, right? They're not like normal airline flooring. So they're very loose and they'll get stuck under the flooring in our airplane and just rot. And the airplane stinks. It stinks, especially in the middle of summer. You open up this hot airplane that's been baking out in the sun all day, and you just open it up, and that smell punches you in the face. It is not pleasant.
So I'm trying to think. So, you know, a lot of the places we serve are, again, I'm on the, you know, kind of like Stu, you're like the artery. You are the you bring the big stuff in. The big loads. And then when they get to, you know, like for us, you know, our the company I work for, Gem Air, we're on kind of the, our niche actually specifically is the fact that a lot of the companies that were Part 135 that were flying into the remote parts of Idaho, Challis and Salmon in particular, you know, these are airports that are really deep in the mountains. At the time they started, they didn't have instrument approaches. And so just getting people that could fly in the terrain and bring the cargo in and actually make it in during the winter in particular was problematic. So again, Gem Air ended up scoring the contract, and because they were familiar with the area from backcountry flying, they were much more adept at understanding the local weather and the routes and how you can still sneak in when weather is down. There are certain places, if you know the canyons, then you know how you can, you know, what the weather patterns are, et cetera. And then obviously we have IFR procedures, but at the same time, these are mountain airports where, I mean, our IFR minimums are still, it's still VFR weather, technically. Our lowest minimum is 1,700 feet and 5 miles visibility. So, I mean,
for that, you Alaskan pilots can help remind me, but I think that was like Ketchikan, or maybe it was Sitka. No, I think it was Ketchikan. But we only had an approved LDA approach, where because it's mountain valley, you're coming in following this LDA. And you're supposed to, when you break out at minimums, you can see the Pappies off 45, I think, to your right. And if you can see that, those like Pappies or approach lighting, you can then make your turn in and land shooting this LDA approach. It's the missed approach procedure is pretty crazy on that approach too. I'll have to look it up. Maybe we'll put it in the show notes. I'll look it up. But yeah,
you know, that's one of the things that like on ours, I flew the RNAV 17 into Salmon coming. So I had a check ride today. I have, you know, when you fly IFR in 135, then you get every 6 months you do your basically an IPC check. And since I'm rated fly twins and singles, every other flight is a twin or a single. So last 6 months, I did the check ride in the Chieftain, which is a piston twin. This time, today, I was in the Caravan. And so flew into Burt Mooney Airport in Butte, Montana, which Butte's not, well, you know, it's a 5,500 foot runway or the altitude of the runway, but you can't do a circling approach on the northeast because the mountains are at 8,000 or 9,000 just immediately northeast of town. There's a minimum climb gradient that you have two different approach minimums. If you can make the climb gradient, then you're entitled to a low approach down to 300 feet on the ILS. If you can't make the missed approach climb gradient, then you have a whole different set of minimums. It's quite a bit higher. And anyway, weird mountain airport. So my morning started out in Idaho. I flew my check ride into Montana, then back to Salmon, and then beelined to Salt Lake in the caravan to get here to start our same deal. We're doing UPS peak season. So you do your company contracts with FedEx. My company serves the feeder hub from Salt Lake out to the hinterlands of Idaho, Wyoming, and Utah.
But you know what's cool? We're basically Santa Claus, if you think about it. If you really want to think about it, we are.
I know.
Pete Seeger delivering gifts to everybody. It's what we do in the middle of the night.
I felt the guiltiest I felt was I couldn't make it through on Mother's Day. I had to let down at a little mini airport because it had gone IFR at the time. I hadn't had my check ride, so I could only fly VFR. And so I can't remember, because actually I ended up flying an approach. So maybe I was, couldn't fly, into ice. I think that's what it was. I was not, anyway, we ended up making it, but instead of all the flowers on Mother's Day arriving at 11 or 10, it ended up 1 o'clock. They still got there.
It was the drama.
Oh, I know.
That's the thing though. I'm out observing people load my airplane, and I start seeing these 1-800 pro flowers. We're not affiliated. They're not sponsoring, but I see these boxes start going into the airplane, and I start thinking, oh, what holiday am I forgetting? What is it? What's coming up? Is it Mother's Day? Is it, you know, Valentine's Day? Something's coming up. I got to get ready. So it helps me. It helps remind me.
Yeah, exactly.
If I could only get people to send flowers around my anniversary, that's all I need now.
I know. You know, it's funny. Every now and again, I have a package of flowers, and it's like, ooh, someone's getting lucky. It's like, or maybe it's somebody's grandma. It's like, oh, well, yeah, it could be that too.
Well, it's a lot of grandmas. I think I have a picture somewhere where our entire belt loader was stacked three high of flowers. There's just flowers for days.
Yeah.
Luckily, it helped mask the cricket smell for a little bit, but.
We fly to one of the big things, like I do a route frequently off assisting. It was actually the first route I flew was from Boise to Burns, Oregon. And that route is to Burns is a ranching community. And so a good chunk of what you're flying is veterinary supplies. And
back to the veterinarian aviation podcast.
Exactly. And
it's the Northwest and it's Texas, you know, it's Texas. You're flying out to Midland. The only thing you're flying out to Midland, it has to do with either animals or oil.
Yeah. I was just going to say oil. Now, have you had any radioactive sources that you've flown?
Yeah. Every now and then, but nothing super major. I think we've only had, you know, there's three categories, if I remember correctly, level 1, 2, and 3 of radioactive materials. And, you know, we primarily just do, I think we get some level 2s every now and then. That's about it.
Okay. You guys are both flying the line, and I have the privilege, sometimes I think the curse, of flying the line. So I'm learning a lot listening to you guys, but tell me what it's like when you first start. First of all, back up. How do you get there?
I think I was trying to get you to apply to Empire around the same time I was, wasn't I, Mike?
What's interesting is I did, and I got an offer, and the offer was to fly caravans out of Spokane, but I also had applied for Jim Air And Jim Air flies
like Jim Air is way better fit for you, though, I think.
Yeah.
You need that backcountry flying, don't you?
I do. Well, it's a combination of a lot of things. One is, when you were talking about your concern when you took your job about being bored, I think I have a lot lower attention span than you. So boredom creeps in a lot faster on me than maybe on a lot of people. So the variety of one of the things I love about the job is I get, we have a dozen different airplanes. And so we fly four different airplane families, Piper twins, the Islanders, Caravans, and then Cessna singles. So four, I have to have every year four check rides just for each of those families. And then two more check rides because I have to do the IFR single and twin every six months. So we were talking six check rides plus, route checks and line checks. So, I mean, you end up with a lot of check airman stuff going on, which is I'm the check airman for the company for Islanders and Cessna singles. So pilots that fly for us, I take them up and we do the check rides basically. And I just did one today. So you do the stall sequence, steep turns. In the case of an IFR, do one coupled ILS, so with an autopilot, and then one uncoupled, so hand flying an ILS, one non-precision approach, and a hold. So that's pretty much your main, what the check ride consists of. The steep turns are under the hood, so you're doing a 45, two steep turns back to back. Back to back, so, left and right.
So you do all your man. It's it's been a while since I've considered actually doing a check ride in the actual airplane. I'm so used to simulators now. That's crazy.
Now, Mike, you're part 135, the air taxi and charter, right?
Yeah, it's 135. Now the one thing that makes Jim Air, it's not unique by any stretch, but of all the operators that I work with, when we're flying into the backcountry, there's a bunch of different operators that do what we do in the backcountry. I think only one other company has IFR credentials where they actually fly airplanes at IFR. And there's a big difference between the two. A 135 operator that flies VFR and a 135 operator that flies IFR, it's just an order of magnitude that's more work.
Specifically with the type of equipment you're flying too. I mean, you don't see that a lot with the type of airplanes you fly, right? I mean, I guess the Caravans, right?
Stu, you fly 121 for the cargo that you do, right?
I do. We are 125 dual crew environment. Yes, we are fully 121. We are fully airline-ized. And to get back to your original question, how do you get here? It's people like you, Stu. You're the reason I'm here. Part of it at least. Building time, being a flight instructor, providing opportunities for flight instructors for work, build those hours. I had a lot of really great learning opportunities and I became a really good pilot because I worked for, flight schools like yours. So, it's how I became who I am today. And then, those skills apparently translated really well into the, this 121 world. Because I seem to do very, very well compared to some of the other people I fly with.
Well, I was going to say, I remember when you were training, I came up and visited you in your hotel there in Coeur d'Alene. And I think you said last podcast that of the people I met who were, there finishing up their initial training with you, you and maybe one other made it through and the rest washed out?
Yes. So the new hire class that I was in was five of us. And me and another FO, Brian, he was an old KC-135 pilot, a KC-135 pilot. So he from Fairbanks. But anyway, we were the only two to make it through. And we were both FOs. Everybody else was applying to be a captain, and only the first officers made it through. It's very strange. You know, my biggest gripe with this company was the training, that the initial training they do through flight safety. There, you know, 3 years ago, there were some major issues with it. But since then, some of that old guard down there in flight safety has left, and some new, younger, fresher blood has come in into the program. And now the training has greatly improved. You know, it still has its issues here and there, but for the most part, it was nothing like it was, 3 years ago, where we were having all these issues with them. And, you know, I finished my check ride this month too. So
now, when you say issues, was it them just being hard for the sake of being hard without it adding value?
And the general aviation knows this too. You get these really old, sometimes former, let me see if I can caricature, pilot examiner. All right. This designated pilot examiner from the FAA, right? You're a new kid. You're trying to get your private license, maybe thinking about going on the airline, and you get this examiner for your check ride, who's like a former retired FAA safety inspector, right? Who knows everything and does everything specifically by the book, you know, no matter what. And, doesn't really have this personality that puts you at ease during the check ride. You know what I mean? And so it's funny that at the time I feel like, they all retired at flight safety, every single one of them. They were there. And so there was a lot of butting heads, and there was a lot of conflict. And, I would experience things like, there was the head of the program at the time. He was forced out. He's no longer there. But I was in the middle of my weekly or my daily ground training, and one of the applicants just closed up his book, textbooks, got up, made a phone call, and was like, "I quit, guys. I'm out of here. See you later." Walked right out of the door, and he was gone, just like that. And the program manager came into our classroom and goes, "Well, I won that bet," and walked out. And it's that kind of attitude, that kind of mentality that was very stressful.
Right, right.
The whole time you're there, because, you know, you have a failure, that's your career pretty much, right? So it's it was very, very, very stressful. And, you know, you have 4 a.m. sim calls and things like that. But all that has changed now. So flight safety has hired a whole bunch of new instructors, new people. There's new program managers that have taken over and really, really have done wonders for the program now. Because I was just down there this month doing my recurrent, and it was night and day. I had my best recurrent yet.
Which flight safety, where are you doing this? In Dallas, or is it one of their other?
No, this is – okay. So there are only there's only two ATR simulators in this country.
Okay.
So one of them is in Houston, and that's the closest one to Coeur d'Alene. So that's the one we use.
I always think when I think of Houston, Coeur d'Alene is, you know, adjacent, right next to it.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to ATR sims, it's the nearest one. So that's the one we're using right now. And So I get to go down to Houston every year as a first officer, but once I make captain, it'll be every 6 months. But they still have some issues. I was there just this month doing my recurrent training, and then we had some two initial training applicants that were going through the ground class, and they were getting pretty frustrated and having a hard time. So I took it upon myself to sit down and help them out. I spent one of my evenings teaching them some things. And the next morning, I got a really nice email from our chief pilot thanking me. And that email, apparently he took it upon himself to email up to the heads at Coeur d'Alene to give me my upgrade slot here coming up. I don't have to wait around to make captain. So I was really pleased with that.
Your willingness to help out a poor person in struggling turned into a kudo and a slot for an upgrade. Nice.
Let's take a step back. And when you first, you got the offer, you accepted it, what was the first step once you went to the airline, your initial training? Was it company and doc, or would they send you immediately to the type rating training?
Well, for me, okay. So for me, the 121, I had my initial phone interview. And thankfully for the pilot shortage, I had a second phone interview. I was not required to go up there and do any initial simulator. I think they just expect you to just, they'll hire you over the phone and then they'll do the paperwork and they'll just send you right to Houston and hop in the sim. And if you wash out, you wash out. That's what, I guess that's how they evaluate you now, is they just see what happens in the sim. But so the chronological order of things that happen is you apply. You get a phone interview, you probably get another phone interview, and then you get a hiring date. Now, my hiring date 3 years ago was when I believe it was October. It was an October hiring date. But as you notice, I just did my recurrent this month. So what happened was I told them I could not accept the October hiring date because my daughter was being born at that time.
So inconvenient.
I know. I would have been gone and would have missed the birth of my daughter. Who
has she got her soaring license yet?
She hasn't. I need to get these kids up in an airplane. Someone had a really nice diamond, on their line for a while and has just gotten rid of it recently. And the one time I actually go to your website to try to rent an airplane, the owner sells it to somebody else. It's a real bummer. I enjoy that. What was that? Tutu, Quebec?
Yeah, that one sold. I don't even fly airline planes anymore. Okay, I'll let the cat out of the bag. I'm a half owner in a Cirrus SR-22 TN now. And it's because we didn't really have planes I wanted to fly. or at least I couldn't get to them. The flight school is so busy because the airline pilot shortage that I had to get my own plane. And
you just had to. I just had to get a Cirrus. Yeah.
Had to get a Cirrus. Well, that's,
and a turbo too. You said 22T?
And 22TN. My wife decided that after flying in Hawaii, which the scenery didn't hurt at all, that Cirrus was pretty nice. It had air conditioning. It was had a parachute. It was comfortable. When she said that, I seized the moment and with one partner found out that I can almost afford a Cirrus. It's an annual now, so we'll see how that goes. But
you can afford half a Cirrus.
I can afford half a Cirrus.
Half a Cirrus is a good part of a Cirrus.
That's better. That's better than a quarter of a Cirrus. So, So that's awesome, Stu. But I guess to quickly finish up what you're asking, you get the phone interview, they fly you up to the headquarters, you give them all your paperwork, they do all the background checks, you pee in the cups,
exactly, yeah.
You get your known crew, you get in the CAS system for known crew, so you know, I don't have to deal with TSA anymore. They start going through some initial ground training with you, going over the manuals, how they operate. You get your iPads, you get all your equipment, you get,
now this is after your type rating training.
No, this is before.
Okay. That makes more sense.
So yeah, you get all the paperwork, you get hired, you get in the process, you're applied the background checks and all that stuff. And then once you go through this initial little ground training there up at the headquarters, then they send you down to flight safety, and that's where you begin your several weeks of type rating and initial either type rating training or your ATP training, which was my initial ATP ride. So
now, did they provide the CTP training that's required for the ATP check, written test?
Yes and no. Short answer is no, they did not. I went and got it on my own. But the airline has a sign-on bonus, right? That more than covers the CPT training. So it's kind of like, because they hired me, I got a bonus that completely covered it on my first paycheck. But they officially do not do the CPT. No.
Right.
We've got five different airline partners that we work with. And in the last 6 months, the bonuses have almost doubled. Someone coming out of the training now, this is before their CPT, it is probably going to get between a $50,000 and a $70,000 signing bonus.
Yes, that's normal. Now, you have to be careful with that. I mean, those bonuses are really high and they're really nice, but usually indicates that the normal salary is a little lower probably than the standard average.
The lowest one that we work with, it is probably around $50,000. The highest, a little 70, and yes, the salary does kind of reflect that.
But you know, but some pilots really enjoy that because the way bonuses are taxed, I believe, differently, or how they, like, I guess how the taxes come out of your paycheck differently with these bonuses, something like that. I'm not 100% sure. Our pay, they increased our salary pay substantially, but it sacrificed our bonuses. We used to have, you know, peak season retention bonuses and things like that. We still have the sign-on bonus, but we don't have these annual, like peak season retention bonuses that we used to have anymore. So I don't remember what that was like now that I think about it. But yes, some pilots enjoy that. Some pilots would rather have the bonuses than the salary, just because of how the taxes work out.
But well, what we're seeing is that someone will come in with zero time. We'll take them through the program in 9 months. They'll instruct for, you know, 12 to 18 months. And during that process, they become a cadet for an airline. And, you know, five different airlines, you know, SkyWest, Air Wisconsin, Republic, ExpressJet, Envoy, all these guys, you know, big players that are desperate for pilots. So they'll take them under their wing as early as their instrument rating. And they'll have a mentor pilot that works with them, someone that's on the line that will stay in touch with them, you know, give them tours and, you know, encouragement along the way. Eventually, in the case of Envoy, they actually hire them when they become a CFI. So they're not our employee, they're Envoy's employee. And then they get full travel benefits, they get paid, and we just pay Envoy like a contract rate.
The airlines, I know all the major airlines listen to our podcast all the way through, you know, sometimes more than once per episode. But, you know, listen up, airlines. This is how you have to do. You need to switch to this mentoring-esque hiring procedure. You can mold the exact pilot that you want to work for your airline.
Well, they do.
This is great, but this hasn't always been an industry standard, right?
Oh, no, this is all very new. I mean, Air Wisconsin helped us develop our interviewing program so that when someone applies to our zero-time airline, Air Wisconsin had made a huge input into how we vet those people and choose which ones become a part of the program.
So what's a red flag? What's a major red flag that Air Wisconsin doesn't like?
Really, one of the funniest things is just, you know, knowing what your interview time is and showing up on time, either for a Skype interview or
person. I wouldn't hire people when I was a chief, I wouldn't hire people if they didn't show up for their interview.
I mean, it's just stupid, simple things. One thing that they do is they have a one sheet summary of the aircraft that they fly, just basic numbers from the plane, the VREF speeds, the stall speed, max gross weight, very simple things, maybe half a dozen numbers. They send that out before the interview. And then during the interview, they'll ask one or two questions from that sheet. All they're really looking for, they don't expect you to really gain any knowledge from that. They just want to know if you even looked at it. Or that, you know, is it familiar to you? And you'd be amazed how many people don't even look at the sheet before their interview.
That's crazy.
Oh,
this
it is.
It's your career, people.
that's the whole thing. You always have to remind yourself, Stu, that half the people are below average.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Now, the airlines are so desperate for people. Sometimes that still works, but you know that is the weeding out. And when we bring people in for the program, we have full financing available, so there's a credit element to it. But most of it is just their, how did they do in high school? How do they do if they took any college courses? And those, have they had any work experience? Have they had military experience? Those are the kind of things we're looking for. Can you, apply yourself and come out the other end being a better person? If people could do that, they're in.
So that's great. So you're not exactly, why do you want to be a pilot? Where do you want to, do you ask them where
they would want to be? If you were a tree, what kind of, no, we'll do that.
That's interesting. So you're really looking for the work ethic. And how old are these people that are interviewing for this flow through program?
There's two major demographics. There are the people just coming out of high school or just out of college, but more of them out of high school, really. College is no longer as critical for an airline career as it used to be.
Yeah, it's not critical at all.
We're seeing a bunch of folks come in from high schools that do their associate's degree pretty much while they're in CFI mode. So they're teaching and learning for the associate's degree. When they go to the airlines, then at that point, they finish their bachelor's before they go to the majors. Some of the majors still require a bachelor's. I think that's going to change by the time most of these guys that are in the program now get there.
Yeah, it'll change.
Yeah, it's no longer really necessary. They didn't care what the bachelor's was in. They just want to know that you could apply yourself to and earn a degree in something.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I have a bachelor's in liberal arts. No, I'm just kidding.
All it takes, baby. And yeah. That's not for long.
Business. It's business, guys. It's business. All right.
But we see these people coming in. The second group is generally career changers, and by far, probably half of the career changers we see are people coming from either military or first responder type, fire or EMT or police.
Okay. I'm sure you get a really successful pool from that, right?
They're actually the stellar candidates, mainly because they've got some maturity and some work experience behind them. They're not any smarter than the ones coming out of high school. They just have a few more years experience.
That's interesting. Cool. That does make sense. That mindset of going from first responder to pilot, it's not an unnatural. It's not like I don't know why. It just seems like a reasonable transition of where you'd want to go.
I think it has that, it's got a military tradition maybe around it with...
Yeah, it's a discipline tradition.
Firefighters, not necessarily. I mean, there's some civilians. I mean, I'm a civilian and I'm in aviation. But for the most part in our industries, I think the kind of like the culture, I guess it's these cultures that are very similar, I think, between the industries, right? And I think that may have some kind of military tradition to it.
We're also seeing a few people that are later life career changers.
Like me.
like me. We had a guy that came in. He was 58, I believe, looking for a career a few years in the airlines. He was 58. By the time he's 60, he's going to the airlines. He'll have 5 years at 121. And at that point, he's thinking he's going to go corporate or charter. But, he's relatively far along, but the airlines are still willing to spend the investment in him for 5 years. He's willing to do it, and it really kind of works out for everybody.
If the airline will take them, that's great.
At my age, I'm 59. I still get notices at least once a month from airlines recruiting me, and they know my age. It's in the public record.
Right.
And they figure 5 years is worth it.
I have removed myself from a lot of, scrubbed my privacy portfolio so that I'm not as out there as I used to be. Well, and either that or, it could also be that I just ignore things now because I don't get any physical mail recruiter things the way I used to. Because for a while, I used to get those. And maybe I just, because I don't, I used to check my email, every 15 minutes because I was running a company. I needed to, when things were happening, I needed to be on top of it. One of the joyous things about flying for the is, hey, look, I just need to check my schedule. We have an app that can look at my schedule. Okay, I know I'm going to be flying next week, you know, or what days I'm going to be flying. And so I don't rely on email anywhere near as much. So I could have all sorts of airline recruiting things. Although, again, I have unsubscribed and gotten myself cleared off of tons of lists and stuff. So I don't think I'm quite as much of a target as I used to be.
I can tell you right now, pilots are in high demand, right? So it doesn't matter who you are. If you can legally fly an airplane per the regs, you know, they'll take you.
I had a guy from Wisconsin tell me once that if you have an ATP and a pulse, you're hired.
Yeah.
If you got enough turbine time, they'll wave the pulse.
You know, that's the industry now. And people in, you know, I'm hearing more and more about single pilot or autonomous aircrafts now because the airlines are getting desperate. They just can't find people to fly the airplanes, in my opinion. I mean, a lot of people think it's because of money saving stuff, but I don't really think it is. That kind of innovation that takes a lot of capital, and these guys, they're just desperate. They don't know what to do. And, you know, for the first time ever, FedEx has kind of come out with their flow through program called the Purple Runway. And, you can Google that and see what it is, but you know, FedEx is one of the biggest sticklers when it comes to hiring, because they're a really big name in aviation and they're used to just having everybody, if given the opportunity, to just drop everything to come work for them. And now all of a sudden they're the pilots are like, you want me to fly when and for how long?
Right.
You know, I'm not going to do that. You know, FedEx has pilots now that are getting hired out of their initial ground training classes, their start hire classes. We just had a pilot recently. I think it was an FO for Midland, just didn't even show up to training because she got a call from another airline. Went over there for more money. I mean, the airlines are calling people as they're showing up for their start dates. It's cutthroat out there.
Okay, Stu, what's next for you? You've got an upgrade coming to captain with Empire.
Yeah.
3 years, 5 years down the road, are you going to be flying for FedEx? Where do you see yourself?
I am enjoying this job so much. I'm kind of thinking I'm going to stay here. So what I would like to do is eventually get, you know, go like Mike, become a check airman here with my airline.
We all want to be like Mike.
We do all want to be like Mike. That is true. That's absolutely true. But I want to kind of get my check airman, do some check airman stuff around here for the airline. And then with that check airman experience, then maybe go on and apply to become a DPE or something, you know, something along those lines. Because I have a lot of free time. I'd like to be able to.
We need to talk.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd like to do that.
Mike, where are you going to be in 5 years?
You know, I have heard this told to me so many times. You're living the dream. And, you know, the one thing is I'm really totally different career path. I do not have the airlines as my targeted terminal direction, nor do I have aspirations to make big money. And I know that sounds strange, but I am happy at my salary level, which is not necessarily competitive from the standpoint of the pilot shortage hasn't hit. Well, let's just put it this way. When you just have to have five pilots that you can rely on, as long as you have five pilots, then there's no shortage. And my willingness to stick around solves a problem for the company. And the reality for them is they don't make any more money than, you know, their rates to fly a tourists into the back country or cargo in out of Salt Lake or Boise. You know, what they can make is limited. And so I don't have a high expectation of my salary rocketing up. But that's not why I fly. I mean, I fly for the lifestyle. I get to live in a small town in Idaho where I want to live, with wilderness right outside my back door. It's a 30-minute flight. I can be in the backcountry fly fishing at what I call Hole of the Gods, because I swear it's where fish come from, the center of the earth. So, you know, I get the benefits of living where I want to live. I have this huge variety of flying, you know, hunters, cargo, commuters, back and forth. And what I, the view out the office window, the wilderness I get to fly over, just charges my battery. And, the kind of flying I do charges my battery. So I think I'm here for the long haul.
You know, that's kind of how I feel about my airline too. So long as, you know, FedEx keeps an ATR base here at Alliance, because this airport's right in my backyard and I used to drive to Addison every day for work. And that's, for those of you who don't know, that's about an hour there and an hour back in rush hour traffic, right? And so it's always rush hour. And so that's 2 hours of my life gone every day sitting in a car, you know, after a hard day of work. And it's just, it's not fun. Now I've got, you know, I can basically walk to my work, just about. It's wonderful. And the type of flying, the people, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And, you know, when I make captain, the pay is going to be more than enough for me, at this level to do this wonderful job. And, so yeah, I think I could see myself being in this airline for 20 plus years, so long as this base stays here. You know, the base security, you know, since I've been here, they've shut down a few bases. They've opened some other ones. And so, I feel like Alliance is pretty secure, but you never know. You never know what it's going to happen in 5 years. So, but what about you, Stu?
Well, different than you two guys, I don't think I'm going to stay the same over 5 years. I'm looking at retirement, and my wife's planning to retire probably within 2 years. We'll live on an air park, so, you know, the Cirrus and the hangar. So the idea is that we travel throughout the country most of the time, maybe, if, you know, into Canada and Mexico, and really just enjoy an airplane and the flexibility it gives us. I still want to teach. I will probably do that with Russ Flight, you know, assuming that I'm still a part of that, which I don't see that changing anytime soon, but I want to teach again versus doing administrative and management stuff. And I'm positioning myself to do that. And my really goal is to, you know, fly to Mexico, spend a week in the beautiful, you know, Puerto Vallarta or down in Cabo, and then maybe go to Canada or go to Alaska and do some fishing.
Oh, that's awesome. That's living the dream. You know, that sounds an awful lot like my retirement plan too. When I told my financial advisor this stuff, she was like, well, I'll see what I can do. It's like, I want a Cirrus 22 Turbo, latest model. I wanted to have the sat phone in it.
Well, I got the sat phone, but I don't have the latest model by any means.
Oh, you got the, okay. Well, you know, we all have to make sacrifices for our dreams, I guess, at some point. So, you know, it's hard to find a better personal airplane than a Cirrus, especially a Turbo. So, definitely living the dream there.
Thank you for listening to the Pilot's Journey podcast. We'd love to hear your comments, suggestions, and experiences. You can reach us at our website at www.pilotsjourney.com or leave us a voicemail at 330-3-JOURNEY. That's 330-356-8763. You can also follow me as Pilot Stu, that's STU, on Twitter.com.
You can reach me on Twitter as CFI Stu, that's STEW, also at CFIStu.com.
And you can follow me on Twitter as ID Mike.
You can also follow us collectively on Twitter or Facebook as Pilot's Journey.
The podcast is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only. Please consult your own qualified flight instructor before attempting anything discussed in this podcast.
And remember to enjoy the journey. Copyright 2019.
Fully Stewed Productions. And One Mic. Find this and other great shows at the Aviation Media Network.
The Voices in Your Head.com.